Welcome to Tasteland. I am your co-host, Francis Zierer.
And I'm Daisy Alioto.
And Daisy, who did we speak to today?
Today, we talked to Cole Nowicki. He is a writer, producer, and publisher based in Vancouver, and he runs the newsletter Simple Magic, publishes books through Fine Press, and is the author of two books himself, Write Down Plus Circle and Laser Quit Smoking Massage. Just finished up an editorial collaboration with Cole and Simple Magic called Sensuous Skateboarding, which explored skateboarding through the five senses. And we culminated with a perfume collaboration with Parafat Perfumes called Nose Grab, which sold out yesterday in less than an hour. And that was really awesome. It's the second perfume Dirt's done. And I'm really excited for somebody to add it to Fragrantica. I've been refreshing to see what people say about it.
Nobody's received it yet.
Some people have, but okay. No, people who bought yesterday have not received.
Mm. Oh, okay. Only the VIPs.
Only the VIPs. Mm. We'll get you next time.
Listener, are you among them? Let us know.
Pete is. Hi, Pete. Pete Williams.
Pete.
Shout out. I want to tell you about a movie that I saw called Magic Farm.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
Oh, the Amalia Ullman, right?
Yeah, Amalia Ullman. Chloe Sevigny's in it. She wears a great outfit the whole time that I was like very inspired by.
Classic.
Yeah, I mean, it is... There's some interesting fashion moments in the film that sort of make it feel like an extended Miu Miu commercial. But
it's basically the plot of the movie is basically like a Vice style documentary crew goes somewhere and things go wrong when they try to make the documentary, right?
Things go wrong. I mean, it's a farce. It's very funny. They go to cover a certain story. They end up having to get more involved in producing a story. It's sort of a crew in search of a story, but throughout the film, it becomes progressively obvious
like
that there's a story that they're missing. And so it's really about a certain type of media and entertainment in search of a spectacle, but it's also about obliviousness. And the obliviousness of privilege, and everyone becomes mired in their own interpersonal dramas, but they're in a part of the world that has much bigger issues.
Yeah. Sounds good. No, I want to see it. I watched Apocalypse Now this weekend, which I hadn't seen since I was 15 or something. It really is all that. It's kind of funny though, too. So much of the movie is Martin Sheen kind of looking into the middle distance and then doing voiceovers, which I think there's a documentary about the making of it that I want to watch. Because it's one of these things, you're watching it, the production, how many extras they have on screen at times. It's hundreds of people. But then the reason it's so much of this voiceover and staring into the middle distance is I think I read that they shot over 1 million feet of film for it. So it's really one of those things that they, talk about spectacle, but that they produced in the edit. Anyways, nothing too original to say about Apocalypse Now, but yeah, five star flick.
Well, speaking of original, let's get Cole in here.
Let's get Cole in here. Speaking of original, what was that, Daisy? Come on. Anyways, let's go talk to him about what this perfume smells like. Okay, so I read the Dirt X Cole X Simple Magic newsletters, and one theme I noticed was the smell of piss in skating. So
yeah, Cole,
why did you make a perfume that smells like piss?
Our perfume doesn't smell like piss though. It's sort of an unstated note.
was that one of the scents that was left on the smelling room floor?
We tested three testers and none of them had piss as a note. There was one that had big gulp as a note, but I'll let Cole speak to the piss.
Well, I feel like when we first started talking about teaming up, I wrote up a little pitch and it did explicitly call out the smell of piss under an overpass. Cause that's just a part of skateboarding. You're going to be under there. You're going to be peeing under there. So it's only natural that those aromas just become a part of your everyday. But no, Nose Grab is the name of the scent. It does not smell like urine. It smells fantastic. There's notes of curbside violets, paraffin wax, tobacco, hot metal. There's one more. Upper lip sweat. That's right.
We sold it out in like, has to have been less than an hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like there were people that were trying to buy it and they didn't get to buy it. And Cole and I were already sitting on our bottles. So we were like, haha, losers.
Did you guys like give like a release time when it would come out so people could set their alarms?
Ali from Parafat has done a really great job of promoting it. So there was a countdown clock and Ali did such a great job of promoting that I have so many like scent influencers who are following me on Instagram now, which is very nice. I don't know what they're going to tune into after this, besides like my occasional skateboarding clip at the park and links to my newsletter, which is all about skateboarding, but I'm happy to have them there.
Yeah, I think that's a great way for a lot of fragrance heads to get skateboard pilled. And I want to ask you about the newsletter. We talk a lot about like people's earliest experiences with media on the podcast. And I'm curious, like what skate media were you consuming growing up? And how did you sort of metabolize that into like the look and the feel and the cadence of Simple Magic?
For me, my earliest forms of skate media were VHS tapes. Mm. So Shorty Skateboards, Fulfill the Dream, or Zero Skateboards, Misled Youth. Read a lot of Transworld Skateboarding magazine because that's the only magazine we got up in my hometown in Northern Alberta. So just reading these like glossy 300-page magazines that were just essentially just full of ads. That was all the pages were just ads and the occasional article. But I used to read those front to back, used to memorize all the captions for every photo. And that's how I definitely got skateboard pilled, was just coming home after school, tearing out the photos, put them on my wall, reading them off the wall. And I think for me, the inspiration more for the newsletter is probably related closer to blogs that I enjoyed going to when I was a kid. Do you remember Fecal Face, the art blog?
Don't remember that.
I can't say that I do, but
you probably shouldn't. You probably shouldn't Google it now, I believe it was a San Francisco based art blog. And that's how I just like would get a look into the lives of different artists and art shows that I would never attend. I don't remember any of the artists' names. But I really enjoyed that experience. Patrick O'Dell's Epically Latered photo blog I used to tune into all the time. Wow, all these cool people in New York doing stuff while I'm here in rural Alberta doing, not much.
So the last piece in the series was something that you wrote called Boom and Echo about returning to a skate ramp from your childhood. One of the hot metal culprits of your sense memory. And we included a GIF of you skating it. But if I hadn't seen that, if I just saw that in the wild, I would think this is some avant-garde sculpture art perhaps. And, you know, peeling paint on it. And I'm just curious, have you ever confronted the city of Alberta about their taste in public skate infrastructure? It seems like maybe needs an update.
So two fronts. The town of Lac La Biche, which is my hometown, they installed those ramps in maybe the year 99, perhaps. So those have been around for a while, and they were not built by skateboarders. They are hollow, so they just, as the name of the piece suggests, they boom and echo across the park. They're very loud. They installed them. I remember they had to uninstall them to put noise dampening material inside of them. Some of the other obstacles in the park are just not skatable, like tabletops where you go from one ramp over a flat surface to another ramp. The angles are such that you can't do that. They're so steep. But recently, the town of Lac La Biche built a new skate park. And my uncle works for the county there. And one day he butt dialed me and he's just like, hey, actually, like, do you want to be on like the committee for the new skate park? I live in Vancouver now, so I'm like a province away. Haven't lived in Lac La Biche for many years. So I got to be on this committee with the local town county about the building of the new skate park in Lac La Biche. So I got to suggest obstacles to be in it, which was really nice. And the skate park design company who first offered plans for it, they were very receptive to all the suggestions. I feel I created like a 6-page document and I was like, hey, we can't repeat the mistakes of the past. We got to do something rad here.
That's amazing. So wait, you did actually kind of confront them.
tell us about the company that puts this together. Is this like a company that just like their full-time work is building like municipal skate parks?
Yeah, the company who built the new skate park in Lac La Biche, they're a newer outfit and they are based in the central Canada. So they service a lot of the prairie provinces, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta. And they seem like nice guys, not terribly experienced. But you know, their hearts are in the right place.
Are they more like skater types or more of like buttoned up architect types? What's the background here?
The guy who was interfacing with from the company with the town council admitted to us that he does not skateboard, which is maybe something that you shouldn't do. But they're nice enough. They're nice enough. And I think I'm going to be back in my hometown in a couple of days and I'm going to skate the park. I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be fun.
Guy that doesn't skateboard but designs municipal skate parks feels like a Conor O'Malley character.
I feel like you should have to have broken a bone to get your license to do that.
Yeah, Cole, how many bones have you broken?
I've broken a few. my arm, my pinky, I've had to have my ACL reconstructed.
Oh, geez.
You know, the ankle is just kind of just a balloon constantly. That's fine. That's normal.
Yeah. Now you have a balloon ankle still?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's just you roll it for a lifetime and it just it gets tired of swelling up. Just in those moments. So it just stays swelled up to stay ready, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stay strapped.
One thing that I feel like talk about on this podcast fairly often is this idea of the death of third spaces and how it's a myth. Mm-hmm. It occurred to me that a skate park is a type of third space, as is, you know, the space underneath an overpass, or whatever, a parking lot, all these different types of skate third spaces. I was curious if you could describe some of these and their traits and like what defines, let's say, a municipal skate park as a third space versus the, you know, abandoned area under an overpass.
Yeah. I mean, skateboarding spots very much can be considered a third space. I've written about this before, like DIY skate parks, the ones that skateboarders build themselves, I think fit that bill most succinctly, in that these are unused spaces generally, you know, industrial sites that have gone into disuse that skateboarders take over, old tennis courts, whatever. Skateboarders bring in ramps, they build concrete obstacles there, they make the space their own, they build a community around it. There's a tennis court just a few blocks away from me here in Vancouver. I live in East Vancouver, and it's just a spot we call the courts. A lot of cities just have these spots as just old tennis courts that people aren't using. Skateboarders take them over. Actually, there were some bike polo players that were there first, but we kind of took it from them. Sorry, guys.
I haven't heard about bike polo in a long time. That reminds me of like the Portlandia intro. There's like people playing bike polo. Anyways.
It looks hard. I would be nervous trying it, to be honest.
Yeah, you might.
But that's right. But skate spots as third spaces, I think, makes a lot of sense. Skate parks, a lot of the time, are there to serve community needs, projected community needs, and what kids should hopefully be doing other than just sitting inside playing video games. Not there's anything wrong with video games. I love them. But skate parks are generally directed to pull people away from skating in the streets, from those more natural third spaces, and even skate spots, whether it's like a ledge outside of a courthouse or something, those become places where people generally hang out, maybe have a couple sneaky beer while they skate the ledge. And you know, spend time. That's where people meet up to then go on with the rest of their day. These are all pretty special locations in their own right. And they become that through the act of skateboarding, which I think is kind of special.
Maybe the essential quality of a third space is that anyone can pee there.
Oh, yeah.
That there's a bathroom, and I think, is definitely an essential quality of a third space, though, whether it's whether it's a technical bathroom or just, you know, a tree you go behind.
Right. If the Starbucks bathroom is locked, not a third space. Disqualified.
Mm-hmm. That's true. The local cafe that I do a lot of my work in the afternoons, they're locals there, but just locals who just use the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great.
Mm-hmm. I think that's awesome.
Okay, you published a piece about 2 months ago now in early April in Simple Magic called Falling or Failing, Making Sense of the Skateboarding Industry's Present and Making Way for Its Future. Can you give us a summary of what's going on in the skateboarding industry right now?
Well, nothing good. So from all accounts, the skateboarding industry is not doing very well. There are layoffs. Companies are closing. There are beloved legacy brands being scooped up by private equity, all that fun stuff. And this has been, it's not a new thing, but it's happening at what seems to be a pretty advanced clip.
Post-COVID, is it? Or
yeah. And I think from the folks that I talked to for the piece, there's some systemic issues with, you know, maybe stagnant ideas, not allowing the industry to really grow and flourish in new directions, like the industry being slow to support women and queer skateboarders, that kind of thing. But a part of it, too, is that there was a big boom of interest in skateboarding during the pandemic, and then that boom sort of dissipated, and those skateboarders weren't kept on, weren't marketed to properly. That could be for any number of reasons, but a lot of the blame some people put on the industry not catering to these new potential users. Mm-hmm. And it's also a weird thing because skateboarding, at least in the pop culture sense, at least visually, wherever it should, like skateboarding is as popular as it's ever been. It's an Olympic sport. You know, you have skateboarders like Evan Mock or whoever who are like on Gossip Girl, or there are skateboarders who are just doing fashion shows and stuff like that. So skateboarding is in the public eye more than ever, but is in terms of the industry and the professional athletes, they're not getting remunerated or supported in the way you would expect, considering at least the visibility of skateboarding in those skateboarders. Mm-hmm. And that piece is trying to explore why that is. It's kind of tough because no one in the industry really wants to tell you what's going on. No one is releasing financials. There is only available financial information for companies that are publicly traded, which is very few. So that was Supreme briefly. So we got to see how poorly they were doing and why they've been sold off a handful of times in recent years. Vans has not been doing well. VF Corp, they just had released quarterly figures a few weeks ago, not doing well. They recently laid off hundreds of people. So it's not a great time. And I think a lot of this, too, is just it's the macro stuff that's going on. The economy's not doing great. Things are, you know, your guy is just winging tariffs at anyone.
Not my guy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the biggest part of it, too.
One thing I noticed in this, too, you're talking about direct-to-consumer and how, like, direct-to-consumer skate purchasing went up a lot in the pandemic, I think. Which, I mean, the skate shop is another essential skateboarding third space, right? Mm-hmm. Was there like a major spike in D2C that like then put out of business or like gutted business from a lot of these skate shops that are more crucial?
There is another skateboarding writer named Mike Munzenreiter who did a piece for Quarter Snacks not too long ago where it was an anonymous survey of skate shop owners. And that is, a reason that some of them cite, you know, direct consumer helps them, but there are also the bigger direct consumer
if you just buy from Vans, for one.
They buy from Vans. A lot of companies will just sell their stuff through Amazon. So that has become an issue. And, you know, skate shops are generally struggling. Could be any number of reasons why they're slow to evolve. Kids' interests are just changing. They're not meeting the moment. You know, there are a lot of skate shops who are more than just skate shops now, whether they're skate shop / coffee shop. My local here, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, like they sell flowers.
Oh, wow.
And part of that is to help pay the bills. I think part of that is just to appeal to more people to get them in the shop. You know, there's, I forget which shop it was that was mentioned in the piece, but, you know, they have like a thrift store, secondhand store within the skate shop because, you know, a lot of the gear that some skateboarding companies produce, like clothing wise, apparel, it's not great. No one, it's not what the kids want to wear because the kids are looking at TikTok or whatever and seeing the fashion influencers. Wow, I sound 100 years old. And that's what they want to dress like. And a lot of those companies are just providing like graphic t-shirts in 4 colors, which is what I wear. So I'm not talking shit.
Yeah. I mean, how many kids, it's weird. Cause like, I remember Tony Hawk, you know, PlayStation 2 game and playing it growing up. But there wasn't a sense at that point that it was like either or, like that you would either be playing a skateboard game or you would be out actually skateboarding. I wonder what proportion of young people today who would otherwise be skateboarders and have affinity for it are spending that time in spaces online, watching YouTube and gaming to the extent that that actually has like cut into outside time. Because it's like, when I was growing up, it felt like it was just like you had your outside time. And then this was like a supplement to your interest in skateboarding, which was primarily physical. But I wonder if it slipped for some people.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much more to look at on our screens now. You know, for me, you get home from school, for some reason, we got Fox Rochester. You watch Judge Judy and then The Simpsons, and then you go out and skate. You know, like even my younger siblings spent many hours playing World of Warcraft. And that was just, you know, online video games weren't a thing when I was coming up because I would play a lot of PlayStation, but then you get tired of it and you go outside. So I know a lot of this is just me as someone in their mid 30s trying to diagnose what the kids are up to. But I think that probably is a big part of it. And there are just also a lot more things to be interested in because the monoculture doesn't really exist as it once did. So you can find so much more to do with yourself, so many more different avenues or inspirations to pull from. Skateboarding now, people are really doing it in a different way. When I started, it's like you had to just do the gnarliest tricks that you could. You have to jump down big handrails, big stairs. But now people are, you know, wanting to put on cool outfits and film clips at cool spots. And I think that is awesome. And people are just taking skateboarding in a different way as well. And I'm thinking I'm kind of going off base of what your question was.
Well, wait, real quick, this idea of like now people wanting to put on cool outfits and go film themselves wearing these cool outfits, doing tricks. Is that the way you say that? Sounds like that's a newer development. Would you trace that to anything specific? Like, is that like a product of like a TikTok or an Instagram or something like that?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know if it's the newest development. There have always been skateboarders who, at least on the professional side, who made their name by being marketable characters more than being the best skateboarder, which I think is one of the cool things about skateboarding. And now with the advent of social media, that is just a lot easier to do, to create your personality, to foster your brand online. Whether that's through your aesthetic, through your tricks, through a mix of both of them, to the point where, you know, there's a belief that the individual brand has now superseded like the skate brand, which, you know, the skateboarder was once defined by what company they rode for. Like, are you a zero skateboarder? Like, you wore tight jeans and you jump down big rails. Are you a skateboarder who rides for shorties, so you wear more baggy clothes and listen to hip hop and skate ledges, etc. And now those barriers are more porous. So you see the influences of the individual kind of dictating the brand more than anything, the actual like company brand, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Well, so how are people finding you? Like, where does your Simple Magic audience come from, and where do people discover you?
Message boards. there's one.
Really?
There's one main message board left in skateboarding. It was for a magazine that used to be called Slap. If I remember the acronym correctly, it's Skateboarding Life Art Photography. And the message board, it's like the main vein running through skateboarding culture still. It's where news gets discussed, gossip, whatever. I share the newsletter there every Friday. A lot of people said they found it there. I share it on social media. I'm not like the biggest poster online, but I share it there, and sometimes people find it there. I do like other writing stuff, and I always make sure to like cram that into my byline. Hopefully that helps.
You've started publishing other writers besides yourself. I think you've been doing this for at least a year now, right? Can you tell us about some of the work you've published recently, not from yourself?
Yeah, that has been, I was a little nervous to do it at first because I consider Simple Magic initially to just be like my personal blog. But now I'm glad that we've started doing that because we've published a lot of really interesting stuff. Christian Kerr, who is a writer based in New York, he's been doing this series. Actually, I have a new one that should be coming out tomorrow. He breaks down different pieces of poetry, connecting it to skateboarding. And he's a really fantastic writer, and just being able to give him the space to really explore that and to have fun has been really, for me, really gratifying, and people have been really connecting with that work. That is his first piece, is why Pete Williams, who connected us for doing this collaboration, that's the piece that got this whole thing going. So that has been good. Natalie Porter, who is a skateboarding and historian and librarian up in Northern British Columbia, she has a project called Women's Skate History, and it just like archives women skateboarders throughout the years who just haven't gotten the coverage that they deserve. She actually has a book coming out in September, and we published some work from her, and that has been really great because she's, again, it's just, there are so many really interesting voices out there that just haven't had the opportunity to be published, whether that's because of, you know, historical gatekeeping, or there just aren't really very many places to get published in skateboarding anymore. Mm. There's not a lot of magazines left, so that has been great. But I'm going off here. Hopefully that answered the question.
Yeah, no, that's great. You've also published two books yourself, and I'm curious. One is about skateboarding. One is essays that deal with skateboarding. But can you talk a little bit about process of publishing those and finding an audience for them?
Yeah. The first book you mentioned is called Write Down Plus Circle, which is the button combination to do a 900 in the original PlayStation version of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. And that book is about the history and cultural impact of that game and how that game really pulled, amongst other things, pulled skateboarding into the mainstream and helped it stay there. And that was a book that, it's part of a series called Pop Classics from ECW Press here in Canada. So it's like 33 and a third, but for like pop culture stuff. So I just pitched this idea to the publisher. They're into it. And then I had a few months to send them a draft. And thankfully I'd just been laid off at the time. So it was great. Thank God I got fired.
Has Tony Hawk read the book?
I know he's held it. He posted it on his Instagram story. Wow. So I mailed him a copy. So he's taken a photo of it. Mm. I don't know if he's read it, but he's at least taken a photo of it.
Yeah. Well, we've all done that with the book at some point.
Yeah. If he put it on his yearly read list and he didn't read it, Tony.
That's a regular Barack Obama right there.
Yeah. Right.
And then the other book is a collection of essays called Laser Quit Smoking Massage. And there's not too much skateboarding in that. It's essentially like a collection of my writing from about 2016 to 2022. Mm. A lot of the pieces are about the different ways and means that people find community in different centers, whether that is small towns, big cities, the internet. Like there's a piece there in the book about a fellow named Arcanibus, who is like a local karaoke legend here in Vancouver, and the community that he's built around himself through doing karaoke.
And cannabis.
I don't know. I don't know if he partakes. But you know what the interesting thing is? So he's been around for a long time. And then once the proliferation of dispensaries came to the fore, because weed has been legal in Canada since 2016,
15. Yeah, thank you for that.
Yep. And there are a bunch of Arcanibus, because he spells Arcanibus like arcane and abyss pushed together.
Oh,
and Arcanibus is our cannabis. And there's a number. It's a chain.
So Francis's brain just exploded.
I know.
Wait, it's a chain. And, okay.
Yeah. And I feel like they have ripped off our guy here. So that's a little upsetting.
Mm. They owe him some royalties for sure.
They should. Oh, yeah. So pieces like that, you know, there's one in the book about this, I think, what is the piece called? Again, The Last Wholesome Corner of the Internet, where have you ever tried to type in Gmail and accidentally went to gale.com?
No.
No, but one thing I do a lot is, unfortunately, I look at Twitter and I looked at LinkedIn a lot. So one thing I've been doing a lot recently is I'll like be on Twitter and I'll try to go to LinkedIn and then I'll just like put, instead of like, you know, highlighting the whole URL, I'll put an LI at the end of it. So I keep going to this guy's page, like Homely or whatever, on Twitter. So yeah, I have not done that specific one, but
Francis is tweeting the word LinkedIn over and over.
This is help. This is not Google. Help me find a job.
Ed balls.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But if you go to, I believe this still works, but if you go to gale.com, there, it's essentially just like a splash page for a domain that this fellow had purchased as a gift for his wife in like the early 2000s, I think.
1996. I'm on the page.
1996.
Right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this page details the story of how he was trying to get a gift for his wife. And throughout the years, like different corporate interests tried to take the page from him. There's like a Brazilian tile company, I believe it was, that just tried to take it, I believe, via a lawsuit. So there's just trying to find stories like that.
Well, I'm going to have a stern talk with my husband for not squatting on domain for me as an act of love and grand romantic gesture. I'm picturing this guy with like a come and take it sticker, and it's just like gale.com.
I believe I could be wrong here, but I believe he worked for NASA. Mm-hmm. So he was ahead of the curve, this guy. And unfortunately, so I wrote this piece for the outline, and I'd reached out to Gale's husband for the piece, and I never heard back. I could only find a contact for him via his Reddit account. And I think it was maybe like a year later, I checked that Reddit account and he had responded. So I never got to include his voice in the story, unfortunately.
Damn. No. That's a great, I can't believe I've never been to gale.com though. That's like one typo I've never made.
Oh yeah. I just had like a work colleague one day was just like, oh shit. I accidentally forgot how to spell Gmail and now I'm here. And so shout out to them for the inspiration for that piece.
You wrote a piece recently called Is Social Media Dead? I'm going to read a couple quotes from it. What does it mean that the promise of social media, for me, has been reduced to the fleeting hope that I might catch a video of a dog doing something wacky without being subjected to some outrageously bigoted bullshit? Is there any promise left? A recent study out of the United Kingdom found that 70% of 16 to 21-year-olds felt worse after using social media, and almost half would prefer a world without internet. So is social media dead, and would you prefer a world without internet?
I don't think social media is dead. I don't know if it'll ever go away. It is definitely, in my view, decaying. It is not. It doesn't feel great, or maybe I'm just aging into it, and it doesn't feel good anymore. But those kids don't seem to like it either. I don't know where it goes from here, because, you know, I detail in that piece, you know, sort of the sordid history and potential futures that a lot of the people who run these companies seem to want and are encouraging, which is part of it. You know, even I still lurk Twitter. I still lurk Twitter, you know, and you see J.D. Vance doing horny Jack Nicholson gif under someone suggesting that Men's Wear a guy is here illegally and can be deported. And you're like, that is just, that's some sick stuff. Mm-hmm. And one thing I should note just to, as a callback. So the initial video that I saw of a dog doing some wacky stuff, it's talked about at the beginning of the piece. What they said I shouldn't put in is that it's a video of a Pomeranian walking on its front paws and peeing at the same time in a figure eight. And I was like, this is the promise of the internet. But then as I scrolled under that, Grok was doing his white genocide thing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was honestly the impetus for the whole piece. I was like, I'm just trying to watch this video of this dog fucking pissing in circles, and I can't even do that.
We can't get away from the piss.
We have to call this episode Piss Land. I feel very similarly, Cole. I'm grateful for the internet. It's given me a lot. You know, it definitely feels like a utility at this point and not something special and magical. And as a utility, I wouldn't even say it's functioning particularly well. We had Mike Pepe on the podcast, and he's written really well about how platforms are not neutral. And as a platform like grows, there is some coercion that happens and needing to use it. You know, there's certain things about technology that feel coercive. Like New York is switching over to the Omni system now and away from like the physical cards. And it definitely feels like the end of something, to require people to primarily use a smartphone to access the subway, which is not the explicit aim, but is the outcome of that. And yeah, it's hard. I think the internet has made us all really available, and a lot of people are trying to figure out how to be less available while still embodying that generosity and openness of the early internet, but it's not getting any easier.
Have you guys, speaking of Mike Pepe, I found this book because he tweeted a review of it from The Guardian, and then I saw it in my local bookstore, but Perfection by Vincenzo Latronico.
Literally added it to my list. I can't remember if Mike is the one who tweeted about it or somebody else. I saw the cover and I did a very superficial, like, ooh, what's that? I want to read it.
Yeah.
And then I read the description. I was like, oh, I definitely have to read that. And it takes place in Berlin, right,
Francis? It takes place in Berlin. And it's like reading it, it's such a, like, I mean, it's about a vaguely, I don't know how old they are when it ends, but like vaguely 30s. By the time it ends, they're maybe 40. But this couple from this like unnamed Southern European country, and it kind of is about, it's all written in this very like easy language. Like I was reading it out loud to Emma the other day, and it's like you can read it out so easily in such a calm voice. It's so kind of detached and cold. There's no dialogue, and it's just like it starts with this, I'm not going to read, I'll read like a few sentences, but it starts with like a description of like the photos that they have on their like Airbnb or similar posting. The reverse perspective shows the rest of the room, a low sofa and Danish curved mahogany armchair upholstered in petrol blue textured cotton, a herringbone tweed blanket, an exposed light bulb with a twiddly filament hanging from a midnight blue fabric cable, a black metal side table with past issues of Monocle and the New Yorker stacked beside a brass candle holder and a glass bowl filled with fruit. Next, a roll-top wooden sideboard displaying spider plant cuttings and glass jars of water, an avocado seed just starting to sprout, and a vinyl record player, two floor-standing speakers connected to an amplifier on a low wall shelf. Above that, an LP collection with a few prized pieces facing outwards, a limited edition in rainbows, a first edition Kraftwerk, a Dresenia casting a shadow like a spindly hand, a Primavera Sound poster. So it's like, and on and on, but there's all these like references of like, oh, like I have that one thing in my apartment, and maybe your apartment doesn't look exactly like this, but you have at least a few of these things. And then they're basically this like freelance, vaguely graphic design, vaguely like web design couple who lives in Berlin. And, you know, it describes like all their friends moving there and the Anglosphere and et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, to sum it up, it's like this, the kind of sameness and like monocultural malaise of being a millennial and of growing up on the internet when like it meant something to find cool things and like that could be part of your identity. And now we're like, everyone has those same cool things. And when they describe that, like, you have a Moroccan rug, it's like, well, fuck, I have a Moroccan rug. And why do I think that's cool? And all these things. It's really, I haven't finished yet. It's really like, it's like a one sitting read. But I have like 20 pages left. But it's, I don't know what it's teaching me yet, but it's very, I recommend reading it because it's about this like malaise of like, is social media dead? Is the internet, are we at the end of the internet? You know, end of culture kind of thing.
Isn't it sort of about like the danger of happiness maxing too?
What do you mean by happiness maxing?
Like trying, going after things to be slightly better, like lifestyle creep. Because I've been thinking about happiness maxing a lot lately. And I think that like above a certain comfort threshold, which is a lot lower than most people think it is. Like in the past, I think it's been assessed as like $80,000 a year. Obviously, if you live in New York or something like that, you would have to adjust it. Mm-hmm. But like up until I think a certain comfort level, people ruin their lives through addiction or things that like inhibit you from trying hard enough to get your necessities met. But once you reach a basic level of necessity, the people who I know who've like ruined their lives, like really ruined their lives, did it by trying to be like marginally happier or getting like a little bit more or going after something that might be like slightly better than what they have now. And I think that that's like what the bourgeois novel has always sort of been about. But I think the reason why like a lot of these books are like enjoyable, but ultimately like sound the same is because they're all sort of circulating around that one theme.
Yeah. I'm going to read one more little bit and then I promise I'll stop reading.
He loves reading aloud on this podcast. And he'll get like halfway through a passage and realize it's like longer than
way too long. Okay. Well, this one will be, listener, you can go to 2x speed for about the next 30 seconds. Yeah, okay. Anyways. The results of that love were all around them. Delicious hot meals, their bills paid, a job and a home they liked, the details that comprised their life. It was a life they had created for themselves, building difference upon difference until it encapsulated the real them with a freedom they would never have had back home. They were proud of it. On the other side of the window, the city pulsed on, calling them with promises they were in no rush to put to the test. Later on, they would fall asleep, breathing in each other's smell, whispering little jokes, sweet nothings, plans for the next day. But really, what they were saying was a prayer, a silent and strangely solemn prayer for things to remain exactly as they were. It was always answered. So I think I read that because what you're talking about the happiness maxing, it's like it's kind of describing a point where like they feel they've reached the maxed happiness, right? And it's like before kind of the fall, before their friends start like drifting away and moving back to the hometown and stuff. And like, I don't know. I think. This kind of happiness, I hadn't heard anybody talk about this idea of happiness maxing before, but I feel like I'm like personally at like some kind of diminished returns there where it's like, I don't need to know about the latest restaurant that opened and I don't need to make a reservation there. And I can just like, I need to focus on other things besides like knowing about X, Y, Z, which maybe this is just like, you know, turning 30 and like realizing I don't have to care about all these taste signifiers so much. I don't know.
Or the cost of caring increases.
Mm. Which it does.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too is just I don't have healthy social media habits. I'm looking at my, like I sit at a station and do my work and I have two screens and then I have a phone and then I have an iPad. And there's just too much to look at. And, you know, if I'm working from home, I do a nap at lunch. I do a little nap, a little 15 minute. Oof, feels great. But I'm looking at the tablet before that because I'm of a certain age to look at a tablet before you go to sleep. I look at the tablet before I do my night sleep. And I'm just always looking at stuff. A lot of it helps me pull stuff to write about for the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to be looking. I don't need to be seeing J.D. Vance posting Jack Nicholson GIF in a really horrific manner. I don't need to be seeing this stuff. But I think it's become so ingrained and enmeshed in our lives that it feels kind of to a degree like you kind of have to. At least for me, I mean, I deleted Facebook years ago. I don't miss it. So I know there are options.
Same.
But a lot of it is, at least with the social media stuff, it's hard to disentangle oneself, even as you see it falling apart around you.
You know, what's how they say, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but they didn't account for apple all day.
Jesus, what the hell?
So true. That's so true.
And but the thing is, like, Apple has kind of like reached a plateau. Like, nothing that they announced at WWDC was like that cool and like
liquid glass
like,
UI.
Yeah. Like, what even is that? Somebody was like, I saw a tweet that was like, if Steve Jobs saw this, he would like take you into back alley and beat you. Mm-hmm. You know, I think my husband and I both have this a little bit of this like John Calvin thing of the image of like the spider on the string over the fire. And like, Francis, you said like before the fall, I feel like there's a certain level of, well, you know, suffering from desire. Like, there's a certain level of saying like when things are going well for you and you were like, you know what would be like really amazing, like if I had all of this plus this other thing, mm-hmm. where you start to feel like the little spider.
If I only had one more jacket.
Yeah. If I only had one more jacket, if I only had a trip to Rome, you know, if I only had insert anything, a better car, I lived in a different city. But then, you know, we both have this thing, but I feel like we take turns being the spider, you know? And then it's like, nobody wants the other person to say, you're being the spider right now. Mm.
Let's move off the internet for a second. I would love to hear.
Not possible.
Okay, well, actually, you're correct.
We're on the internet.
Shut up.
Cole just like leaves the call. All right, that's a weird way to end.
Okay, this question actually is not fully off the internet, though. But I was looking at your recent skeets, because you may still lurk Twitter, but you don't really post there. You're you know, a relatively prolific blue sky user. And you have been posting a lot recently about Vancouver's mayor and that he is Bitcoin obsessed. And I don't know anything about this, so I would love a little bit of local Vancouver politics insight.
Yeah, our mayor is a fellow named Ken Sim. He, during his campaign the second time around, he lost a very close election a few years back and then won in a rematch 2 years ago now. And he throughout has campaigned on, you know, bringing swagger back to the city. That's like a
hell yeah.
That's an unfortunate quote.
Who was the crack guy? Rob Ford.
That's Toronto.
That was Toronto.
Yeah, but like, your guy will never be him. You know what I mean? Like,
Ford had swag.
I'm saying. Ford had swag. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
He was a more compelling person for sure.
Compelling is a euphemism.
More compelling character for people who don't live in Canada to look at on the internet.
And that's the thing. Everyone just calls him Crack Mayor, but he has a name. He has a name, and it was Rob.
I did get his name right.
his brother is the Premier of Ontario.
Doug, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Rob and Doug. Just a couple boys from Etobicoke. And Ken Sim, bringing swagger back to the city. One of the things that always comes to mind when I think about him is, I think it was perhaps after his first year in office, he was profiled by a local magazine. And the opening scene is the journalist waiting for him in his office. And Ken Sim is like, I need to change out of my workout clothes. And he just like drops trow in front of the reporter. And that's swag. But he is also like a big proponent of Bitcoin. He has investments, I believe, in companies and also in Bitcoin itself. He wants to create a strategic Bitcoin reserve for the city of Vancouver. Mm. He was recently at a conference for Bitcoin in El Salvador during while there was an election cycle for city council seats here in Vancouver. I'm personally not a fan. It almost sounds like trite and cliche to say, but he was like just in the pocket of developers. Like, do you know who Chip Wilson is?
Mm-mm. Wait,
he is.
Oh, yeah, no. The founder. I was thinking of Chip Gaines.
He's the founder of Lululemon.
Oh, yeah.
And he is like a
big legging.
Yeah, he is essentially just like a right-wing crank now. And that guy helped fund his election through, like, you know, different PACs. I think we call them something different here. But essentially has funded Ken Sims' campaign and then almost every piece of legislation or whatever, bylaw, whatever, is influenced by the moneyed interests. And the Bitcoin stuff, I just find it personally pretty upsetting that our mayor is going off to conferences.
Well, sounds like our president.
Bigger problems. He sounds like your Gavin Newsom, to be honest.
I don't think that's an unfair comparison. It's a guy who is more concerned about image than actually managing the community. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to point out stuff like how when they announced that the Rolling Stones were coming to Vancouver, that they projected the Rolling Stones logo up on City Hall. Like, that stuff is fun to talk about because it's so stupid.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, but ultimately,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, hey, the Rolling Stones are coming to the city, and he's like trying to chalk it up as a win for himself.
Yeah. Well, after that, let's do Beatlemania.
Let's do Beatlemania. Yeah. Ringo Starr is coming to Earl's. Mm-hmm. Do you know Earl's, local restaurant chain?
Mm-hmm. No.
Good stuff.
I wish.
And it's just a lot of, and maybe that's even a function of just how the internet has warped people, where it's more presentation than substance, or the presentation is just masking a lot of the nothing that this guy does. He advocates for Bitcoin, but then doesn't attend. I think he's missed like 33% of all council meetings. Mm-hmm. Like, bro's not even doing his job. No. But anyway, so that's why I'm skeeting about him a lot. And I was
maybe he's trying not to get Adams.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people do compare him to Eric Adams,
yeah.
But he doesn't have the one-liners. He's not as poetic. He's not going to tell you that your haters are just waiters at the
table.
That's
exactly
what I was thinking. Then he's swagless. It's all about the one-liners.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not gonna tell you about how he had this shorty in Queens. He's not gonna.
I think it was Rockaway, actually.
Well, that's Queens.
He has shorties everywhere. Yeah. You're right. It is. Mm-hmm. It is Queens.
Like, that's, it's so powerful, that stuff crosses borders, mm-hmm, and continents. Like, I'm on the other side of North America, and that got to me because it's unfortunately quite beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to talk about some of your bets on the future of skateboarding from the piece you wrote at the beginning of the year. I've selected four, and, you know, we're about halfway through the year, month short of halfway. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask the status of these bets. So, number one, you gave yourself +300 odds. A new product gimmick is introduced to the skateboarding world, and for a brief confusing moment, everyone is stoked. Where are we on that?
That's a good question. Because that, I wrote.
Thank
that.
You. You wrote it.
Thank you. Thank you.
You asked
and
the
me.
Question.
Anyways,
that happened last year. So I was riding high. There's a new formula for a wheel that came out, mm-hmm, that was both soft and slides. Mm-hmm. Usually the wheel has to be hard to slide well. So people were really excited about Dragon formula wheels. You have to say it like that.
With some slides.
Soft slides. But this year, that's a good question. Has there been...
Maybe they'll make the skateboards out of that metal that they just found that passively harvests water from the air.
I haven't heard of it.
Oh.
It's like
anti-rust. You should read Clone.
Touche.
No, not anti-rust. It might not even be a metal. It's a material, is how it's described. Hmm. And it will, it passively harvests water from the air. So there's like a potential for, I don't know, water to be managed by like maybe extreme condensation is kind of how I took it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe they could make a skateboard out of that.
If you made the trucks out of that, perhaps that helps them grind better. There we go.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's been a product that is breaking through in that way just quite yet. So I'm I might be fixing to lose my imaginary dollars on that one.
Darn. Okay. So we have another bet. You gave yourself plus 200 on this one. A skateboarder breaks new ground by being the first to receive a signature model shoelace.
Well, after I wrote that, people wrote in to tell me that some people have had signature model shoelaces, but they were shoelace belts, which is different.
Okay. Shoelace, but that's too woke for me. You have to take the lace from your shoe. That is just altogether too woke.
Well, this is the thing. You buy it. It doesn't come with a shoe. It's just a shoelace. And I believe it was a Canadian skater, Mickey Papa, who had the signature model shoelace belt. If I'm wrong, apologies, Papa. But I don't think anyone has had a signature model shoelace just yet. But I can feel it. It's coming.
I'm pretty sure like The Row has done a shoelace belt that costs a lot of money, like specifically. I'm looking it up. I don't know. Okay, maybe this isn't a lace, but there is a – no, this is just – a thin wrap belt from The Row that costs $2,150.
Sounds about right.
Anyways, okay, so moving on. The next bet, skateboarding's big trend for 2025, Christianity. You gave yourself minus 120 odds on this.
Nailed it. I've nailed it.
Wait, so far, yeah.
Yeah, so God is big. He's big this year. She's big. There are a lot of top professionals who are wearing just like a lot of Jesus inspired swag. They have, you know, Bible verses shouted out on their t-shirts during contests or whatever. There is also a local guy who is going to contests. Like there's a big contest called Tampa Pro in Tampa, Florida. And there's a guy who goes there and he's essentially trying to be like a pastor or minister for professional skateboarders. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's leading sermons and prayer sessions and I guess is maybe more of like a spiritual advisor to a lot of these guys. I still don't know too much about what's going on inside there. That's something I've been keeping an eye on.
The way you're talking about this is making me think of like how I have heard of like Hillsong and Justin Bieber spoken about.
Yes. And Ryan Sheckler, who we all know, who we all, I'm sure, have fond feelings for. He belongs to a church that is very active in promoting him, and he in turn promotes the church. He says it helped save his life. I don't doubt it. More power to him. But Christianity it's pretty big this year, and I think it's a big year for whatever version of Christianity exists now. Like I'm going to take us on a weird tour here. I'm a big fan of combat sports and mixed martial arts. And unfortunately, I watched the recent UFC card over the weekend, and every fighter who won thanked God so profusely and then also shook Donald Trump's hand because he was in the audience. Mm. And I feel like that's the convergence. It's like the evangelicals are like, they've done it.
This is kind of like I watch a lot of soccer, and I feel like a lot of soccer players are quite religious. And when they score, you know, pointing up to the sky there. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like professional sports people are disproportionately religious compared to the general population.
I mean, you'd think it would keep you more humble if your gifts were bestowed upon you and not just yours through hard work, you know? But I do think it's amazing that you just beat the shit out of someone in the octagon and then you're like, thank you, God. That was so dope how you allowed me to just maim this person.
Mm-hmm. When there were that's two spatters of blood on the mat, that's where he guided my hand. Okay, last bet. The last bet you made that I want to ask about. You gave yourself minus 500 odds on this. New skateboarding media ventures flourish.
We're getting there. We're getting there. There are a number of new blogs that have popped up. There is one run by my friend Farron Golden called Skate Bylines. It takes a more traditional journalistic approach and also is like really essentially like collating a lot of work that exists on the internet now and bringing it and like linking out to it, sort of like what Clone does. And that's appreciated. There are some new magazines out in Europe, one called Bubble that has been putting out a lot of really interesting articles. So there is stuff happening. It's just that you're either doing it for the love or a shoe brand is footing the bill, and there's really no in between, which is the state of media in general, really.
What is there? Are there any particularly, like, in terms of shoe brands fitting the bill, are there any particularly good state-sponsored projects, as it were, in skateboarding media right now? Because in the way that we were talking earlier, too, about how the, you know, the skate brand as like kind of the container is a little dead, and it's about the individual. Are there any particularly good shoe brand sponsored media right now?
Most media is sponsored by companies. Like skateboarding magazines started out as a way for
where to sell shoes,
companies to advertise product, and it's never really changed. Doesn't mean there hasn't been a lot of good skateboarding magazines or good skateboarding media, but if it wasn't for those brands, a lot of them directly funding different projects, whether it's tour videos, whether it's whatever, a lot of skateboarding media just wouldn't exist, which is, I don't know, it's conflicting, because that generally means that there's like no real skateboarding journalism, because there's no way to separate the financial backer from
the foot from the
subject. So essentially everything is sponsored by Vans or Nike or Converse, or, and you know, I'm saying this as a negative thing. There are negative aspects to it, but if it wasn't for those companies promoting their products, we wouldn't have cool videos to watch. I like watching videos. I write about them in my newsletter. But we don't have big financial backers over at Simple Magic.
Best video.
That's all I say.
Wait, best video this year. If a listener was to leave this and watch one skate video, what would you suggest they watch?
Best skate video so far this year. That's a good one. There is a lot of content that comes out, and I'm not a big fan of the word content when it comes to skateboarding videos, because there's so much work that goes into it, and blood, sweat, and tears. Best video so far. If I remember my timelines correctly. Oh yeah, no, this came out. There was a recent video by Hard Body Skateboards. Do you know that brand? New York based. They put out a video featuring two of their riders, who I believe are both from Argentina. I can't remember the name of it, but if you just look up Hard Body Skateboarding, feature one of the skaters in it is Ezzy Martinez. That was a really fantastic video. A new Baker Skateboards video came out yesterday.
Are you talking about, is it Never Enough 3? There's also Victor's Voyage. I'm just looking at the YouTube.
I think it's Never Enough 3.
Okay, sick.
Yeah, that's a really good one. But that's also sort of the issue, is that there's like so much content that it's hard to keep track of it. And that's what I try to do in the newsletter. But clearly it doesn't stay in there. But you can go to simplemagic.ca and check it out yourself.
That's a perfect place to end it. Go to simplemagic.ca. Cole, thank you for coming on.
Thank you both for having me.
This is Taste Land.
Listeners, we'll see you next week.